This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Illinois Wesleyan University professor Megan Burke tells us what she learned interviewing Tea Party leaders in that state. The Battle Creek native is the author of Race, Gender, and Class in the Tea Party. But first,
a respiration device may soon be saving the lives of premature babies born in developing countries. Two Western Michigan University students have developed the mechanism. Joseph Barnett is a senior majoring in biomedical sciences. Stephen John is a senior majoring in biomedical sciences and mechanical engineering. He is in Nepal, and he joins us via Skype. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's begin with the problem that you saw and what was out there that made you say, these hospitals are going to need something different.
Eric Cheng, a respiratory therapist who I had met while I was in Nepal, told me about how for infants requiring a basic level of treatment, CPAP, there were great devices that were in place in these rural hospitals, but for sicker babies requiring additional treatment, a dual level treatment, similar to like a BiPAP, there wasn't anything. And so you have these kids that need additional treatment that's not available at these local centers. And so often they would die on the 5 to 6 to 10 hour drives to larger cities with those facilities. And so there wasn't treatment that was affordable, that was low power, that was easy enough to use to where these rural medical centers could treat these babies.
And that's rural Nepal?
Yes.
And these are babies usually suffering from respiratory distress induced by premature birth.
So explain exactly how this new device works.
Yeah, so it's really been tailored to work off. So there's a treatment that works well. It's used all around the world, bubble CPAP, that gives this basic first level of respiratory treatment. And we've really tailored our design to work off of that treatment so that there's just an exhaust pipe in that treatment. And if you remove that pipe and replace it with our device, the rest of the circuit being the same, you can now provide this dual level treatment. In other words, there's a low level of pressure, but there's also a high level of pressure, and you cycle between those. And that's helpful for these sicker infants suffering from moderate to severe respiratory distress syndrome.
And what it does is that these infants have trouble keeping their lungs open and breathing, and so it prevents lung collapse and enables them to breathe in and out with this dual level pressure.
Yeah, so formally it's the functional unit of the lungs, the alveoli. The treatment helps recruit and stabilize those alveoli. So if you think of it as like a bunch of small balloons, it's almost like the air with positive pressure is keeping those balloons inflated for the baby. So the baby's still breathing on their own, but this positive pressure keeps those balloons inflated and it reduces the work of breathing.
So that those sacs, those little balloons, don't collapse.
So it's a very inexpensive device. I mean, how much does it cost to put something like this together?
It's a lot less than what's currently out there in the States, that's for sure. We're looking at selling it for a few dollars versus thousands of dollars in the States for something like a BiPAP machine or a ventilator that's capable of delivering this treatment. So if centers are already set up with the existing treatment bubble CPAP, they can pretty easily add on our adapter device for, say, $20 or $25 or something like that.
And still be able to, at the end of the day, save many lives that otherwise might not be.
Yes, sir.
Where do things stand right now in terms of getting this into more hospitals?
Yeah, so we've got a working prototype in the lab which produces clinically relevant pressure waveforms. So what do we mean by clinically relevant? Well, the lower level of pressure and the upper level of pressure, and then the amount of time that it spends at each of those, it's about a second at the lower level of pressure and half a second at the higher level. All of those that our machine currently delivers correspond to what respiratory therapists will typically deliver to these premature babies. So we've got the working prototype in the lab. We've also got I'm an engineer, so we've got a simulation, a numerical model as well that's in good agreement with our prototypes. Joe's working with another engineering student in the lab quite extensively now to do a lot of testing with 3D printed prototypes. And then once we've really finalized our design, we're going to produce it by injection molding, hopefully by the end of this month, maybe within 2 months at the latest. And then we'll have 500 or so of these devices ready to use.
And would that be strictly for Nepal, or are there other nations where you might be able to get these also into hospitals?
We would probably be initially starting with Nepal just because you need to get the clearance from the Health Research Council, and then the hospital's institutional review board needs to also approve it. And so we know how to do that process in Nepal. So it would be natural to start in Nepal and expand to its 93 different hospitals. But the need is definitely very widespread. And we've had some contact with doctors all around the world. For example, one in Burundi who have requested the device once it's ready for patient use.
We anticipate eventually, once kind of proving the concept in Nepal, being able to expand out into places like Burundi, or we've talked about India or Indonesia, where there are millions of respiratory deaths induced by respiratory distress from premature infants.
Let's go back a bit. Both of you have done some, I guess, work, missionary work, I don't know if that would be the right word, which has maybe exposed you to allow you to see some things that a lot of us in the United States don't see on a regular basis. You know, kind of describe what you see out there in terms of the healthcare system in a place like Nepal. Would it be surprising to someone in the United States just what is there and maybe not there?
I think that a lot of people are aware that there are, you know, health disparities out there, but many people, other than seeing a commercial or a picture online, they haven't actually experienced that. And so going to a place like Honduras or Nepal and getting on a bus and traveling for hours, you know, and then getting into a car and traveling on dirt roads for hours, and then getting to a hospital where you see these health disparities firsthand, it is pretty surprising and shocking.
And Stephen, you spent some time in Nepal when you were growing up, right?
Yeah, so I, between the ages of 5 and 16, actually lived in Nepal. That was our base. And now I've gone back most summers since then. I think similar to what Joe was saying, you know, just in general, there's so many disparities, you know, the quality of the roads and how rural the setting is and whatnot. But I think for me, like, I was very impressed. And I think often people underestimate the excellence of care that can be delivered in these settings. And there's a lot of sort of innovative thinking with, like, improvising and making do with what you have to still provide excellent care. And I think one huge difference is that money is a very significant factor. And so if you're a patient coming in with your premature baby, you'll think very seriously before you agree to treatment, just because if that's going to cost you your family farm, including your two buffalo and your land, and then you'll have no way of supporting your other three kids. It's not like, well, yes, treat him at whatever the cost. Well, the family has to actually think about that very carefully and make a decision based on, you know, the community and how much everyone can pitch in to help. And so I think out of that environment, you sort of have this crunch where you need to design stuff that will produce very similar results to the West, but at a fraction of the cost.
And I think one of the things that the hospital in Tonsan and also in Honduras, in Balfate, both hospitals are really trying to provide treatment at a very affordable price to these people so that it costs just a fraction of what it would cost in the States, but they're still receiving excellent care from well-trained physicians who really care about those people.
So I think one nice way to sum it up is you're seeking to provide excellent medical care on a shoestring budget. You can't compromise the excellent aspect. Otherwise, you're not doing anyone a favor, but you have to keep in mind the budget with which you're doing it.
For both of you, as you go forward, you're both seniors. Is medicine something you intend to pursue? And I guess, do you see yourself always kind of doing what you can to help out an area of the world like Nepal or perhaps another country which is still developing?
Definitely. Stephen and I both plan to attend medical school, and long-term, we'd both like to practice medicine in low-resource settings or developing countries like Nepal and Honduras.
Yeah, and I think one item to stress there for both of us, and then obviously for me personally, but I think also for Joe, we're looking at that as sort of the long-term, what we'll be doing with most of our time. So like a full-time, so I'm going to the University of Michigan's med school starting in August, actually. And then after all of that training's done, I'm anticipating going to somewhere like Nepal or a similar setting and working there full time, practicing medicine, and then also hopefully designing medical equipment for that area.
I've traveled to Honduras 6 times, and I think once you do that enough times, once you see the need, it doesn't really leave you. And so that's kind of a lot of my inspiration for wanting to be a physician, is working in those settings and seeing that people really do need healthcare and it's a real thing. And they're not receiving it in a lot of places. And so that's stuck with me, and that's kind of been a lot of the energy that I've put into my coursework and my research and all of that sort of thing.
Would you also like to both pursue, perhaps, opportunities to develop more medical devices, the sort of things which can help a poorer part of the world with something like premature babies? I mean, do you see that as maybe part of the career path going forward as well?
Yep. So I definitely do. So as you know, I studied mechanical engineering for my undergrad, and I definitely don't want that to be a waste. And right now, while I'm in Nepal, I'm helping the biomedical department repair equipment. And so I definitely see continuing that in the future.
Yeah, and continuing it in a way that was similar, I think, to this project, in that we saw this need and someone presented it to us. And then we thought about it and said, how can we design something that would be affordable and easy to use, relatively easy to use for people practicing medicine in developing countries? And so I think we'll both have an opportunity to see those sort of needs in the future, and that will enable us to continue doing this.
Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joseph Barnett is a senior majoring in biomedical sciences at Western Michigan University. He has joined us in studio. Stephen John is a senior as well, majoring in biomedical sciences and mechanical engineering. He is in Nepal, and he joined us via Skype. You can find a link at WMUK.org to the article in the most recent Western Michigan University magazine on the device created by these students, which will help premature babies in developing countries. We recorded the interview with Joseph Barnett and Stephen John on Monday. On Tuesday, it was announced that they are among this year's winners of the prestigious Lemelson MIT National Collegiate Prize Competition. The awards are given to innovators in a wide variety of fields. It includes a $10,000 cash prize.